Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor right here on WGN Radio. I'm Ed Maher from National Coalition of Labor, and I'm here with Phil Davidson from the Mid-America Carpenter Regional Council.
Good morning, Ed.
What's happening, Phil?
Not too much. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. 2026 has treated me okay so far.
So far, so good?
Yeah. What about you?
I'd say the same. We finally got through all the sickness and disease in my house.
Yeah. Remind me, do you have a New Year's resolution?
Yes. You guys are all making fun of me for it. Mine was to learn some coding skills, as they say, vibe coding.
Yes.
On, not exactly through ChatGPT, but some of these other platforms.
I can see why we made fun of you for that.
Yeah. Considering I can't even explain what I want.
That's a good
learn
point.
As my resolution.
You can learn what you want the resolution to be and then hit it in 27.
Exactly. That's probably a better option for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you got to know this stuff now, right?
I think there's a better case than ever that you do not need to know this stuff.
Well, I do a lot of reading about AI, what I read is it's not as much that AI is going to take your jobs, it's people who know how to use AI are going to take your jobs. So that's what
fair.
I'm trying to get myself caught up on, and I mean, also make my life easier. If I can learn how to create apps and, you know, strike gold and all of a sudden.
So real quick, I'm going to tell you a very interesting, fun use of AI that I found over the holidays. I shouldn't say I did.
Delightful
better half found it. But what we've been doing the last couple of years at Family Holidays is everybody gets an anonymous challenge. So everybody gets, there's little like challenges, and everybody gets it before the start of dinner.
Okay.
And during the course of dinner, everybody has to complete their challenge.
It's like a scavenger hunt?
Yeah, but for Thanksgiving, I had to use like five syllable words during the course of dinner. This time I had to, you know, compare like three times, just say that dinner was as good as a 5-star restaurant. So everybody's got different things.
Who creates these challenges?
So my wife has ChatGPT come up with them.
Okay.
And then she prints the thing and it has like all the names and what their challenges are. And basically everybody had four challenges and there were 10 of us at dinner. So there wasn't a word spoken around the table that was sincere or like just generally meant as conversation. Everybody was working a bit for an hour in the whole table. We were just losing our minds.
Now it's completely just infiltrated our social interactions as well. Not just work related. Now it's just like saying hi to someone and interacting is being driven by ChatGPT.
This is like a game, and it's fun, okay? Don't rain on my Christmas parade.
It's funny that it's really inescapable at this point, no matter what you're doing.
I don't use it for really anything other than sometimes travel planning. That's about it.
I've heard that's a great use for it.
It is the only use that I've found that I really like.
And now you can book hotels, flights directly through it, right?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. You just want to get the itinerary set, and then you take it over from there.
I'm a believer that the good people working at United Airlines need someone to call and book flights and keep them employed. So
very true.
Yeah, that's my plan.
But, well, how was the rest of your New Year's?
Everything was good. My New Year's resolution, after great thought, I think is going to be to read like 25 books this year or something like that. I've been doing the book thing every year, but whatever. I like it.
That's about par for the course for you, right? You're a big reader.
I only did like, I did 15 or 16, I want to say, in 2025, with, you know, like an unfinished half of War and Peace really clogged the pipeline for me for the summer. So whatever.
That's,
silly move.
That's an accomplishment to finish that.
I didn't. I read half of it.
Half is just as good.
Not going to
It's like having a 13.1 stick bumper sticker on the back of your car.
For sure. Yeah, I drove 13.1 miles many times in 2025.
What about you read mostly nonfiction?
I read a lot of nonfiction. I started to get back into like novels a little bit over the course of 2025, but I read a lot of like history type of stuff. So yeah, but one of my Christmas gifts for my wife was The Ghost of King Leopold's Ghost, the story of the colonization of Belgian Congo. So she thought that I would like it, and I was very excited. So that shows the level of nerdery.
Was that your favorite nonfiction book of the year?
No, I just got it for Christmas.
Oh, you just got it. Sorry. Yeah, what was your favorite nonfiction book of the year?
No Place for Us. No Place for Us is a book that's related to the show, I feel.
Okay.
Because it's a story about the working homeless in America. It was one of New York Times' 10 best books of 2025. I read it before that list came out.
It's a new book.
Yeah, it came out in 25, but it's just a story about like how many people in America are working full-time, often working two jobs, and yet like the cost of living, the cost of everything makes it so that they, you know, they work 60 hours a week and they can't afford a place to live. So it's just a look at like the side of America that people don't know about. But we talk about that stuff on the show
all the time. I mean, unfortunately, I think that is the experience for might even be the majority of the country at this point. I mean, it's getting that way.
It's getting worse faster than it's getting better.
Yeah, if it's not the majority, I think it will be.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But I think we can do a full book report on that as a show segment one of these days.
Workers' Mic Book Club.
Yes.
I hear, who wants that? Dead silence. Okay. Other than me. No, I don't think anybody wants that. So if you want that...
We're going to let the audience drive message. The content of the show? Okay. See, we're doing things now.
I like to take the audience's wants into consideration.
No, this is a dictatorship.
And with that in mind, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay, fine.
We have a whole bunch of stuff to get into. There's sort of labor action going on across the country right now. We want to talk about 2026 being, above all, the year of the worker.
Yes.
And there's a lot of interesting things coming this year that will play into that. And then I want to do a little bit of a deep dive on organizing in the tech industry, you know, because this is something that a lot happened in 2025. I think there's a lot more that's going to happen in the coming year. And when people think about unions, they think about construction workers, they think about teachers, maybe police, fire, whatever. But you don't think
public
about
service,
tech.
Yeah.
And you certainly don't think like, well, lawyers would never be in a union and, you know, managers would never be in a union. And it's just not the case. And I think that the tech organizing in 2025 gives some really good examples that will help people understand like why
they need it most.
Yeah, there's different reasons for different types of workers to need a union, and I think tech illustrates that really well. So excited to get into that.
Yeah, their jobs are under threat maybe more than any other sector right now.
Yeah, there's no question because, unlike you, there's not a lot of people out there who are out trying to learn how to code.
Exactly.
They're asking the ChatGPT to do it for them.
Yep.
Unlike you, Phil, you're willing to put in the effort, and for that, I commend you.
Leaving everyone in my dust.
That's exactly right. So we'll be back with more Workers' Mic right after this.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher here with Phil Davidson, and we are in the early days of 2026, and toward the end of last year, Phil, we joked a little bit that 2025 was kind of a tough one for workers.
It was.
Just
in terms of number of contracts shredded in the federal government.
The trend
took that one on the chin.
Trend of workers' rights, coming on down from Washington in the public sector, certainly where they had a lot of control and, you know, gutted millions of jobs from union rights and eliminated, I want to say, almost 300,000 federal positions, but then also, sort of dismantled the National Labor Relations Board, which sets the playing rules for all private sector employees, which is the majority of the workforce.
And then not to mention all the jobs that were cut through the rescission of tax incentives, through solar fields, solar projects throughout the country, through wind energy, we'll get into later. So, in addition to labor protections and labor infrastructure being dismantled, we also lost a lot of jobs.
So all that to say, 2025 is kind of a rough one, and we're eager to leave that one in the past. Now, we started this show back in 2022. If you can believe it, listeners, that's true. So 2022, 23, and 24, every year it was the year of the worker.
Hot labor summer. Right?
There was a hot labor summer
that was
mixed in there.
24, I believe.
That was a great summer.
It was a good summer.
Not a bad summer. So I think once we forgot to do a year of the worker in 25, we might have jinxed it.
We did.
for all you folks out there, you know, we're sorry, and we're going to do right. So this year, 2026, is going to be the year of the worker. We're calling it. Can't give a lot of specifics on why that's going to be.
Oh, we can, though.
Well, I'm going to give a little bit of a microcosm of one state where I think they're going to turn things around big time in 2026, and that is our cheese-loving, terrible football team-having neighbor to the north, Wisconsin. So
the great state.
That's exactly right. So we've talked, you know, over the years, and many of you who
the Badger state.
Yeah, who study, sure, who study labor history and pay attention to this stuff know that Wisconsin had a rough go of it. Back in 2011, there was a governor by the name of Scott Walker.
Boo!
Yeah. Hold on. I don't even know. I don't have the buttons here for the booing. So
I'm better than the buttons.
We'll suffice with Phil's boo on that one. But we have Scott Walker, who's hoping to become president, trying to, you know, build up his conservative.
Wow, bonafides. Did that not work out for him?
Well, we'll get to that. But so what does he do? He passes something called Budget Act 10, which essentially eliminates public sector unionism.
Collective bargaining.
In the state of Wisconsin, which was a state that introduced public sector unions, ironically enough, tragically enough. But they created a set of regulations that was so onerous that unions basically just wound up walking away from their members because they were unable to represent them. You couldn't bargain for insurance. You couldn't bargain for retirement. You couldn't bargain for anything other than wages up to the rate of inflation.
Right.
So, you know, if you propose talking about retirement, you know, security or pensions or any, you know, health care, your employer would just walk away and be like, we're not going to talk about that.
But spineless weasel that he is, he did the carve out for
police. He left
police
and fire out, which, you know, that's the move. That's how you get people to sort of get off your back. If you leave police and fire alone, typically they'll let you get away with it. So then you go after the public sector, which he did through Act 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go after the private sector by passing a right to work law and, you know, eliminating prevailing wage protections, which this was all part of the playbook back in the early 2010s. For conservatives who wanted to run for president.
Yep.
So Scott Walker did all this. And what it did essentially between then and now was it halved the amount of union members in the state of Wisconsin. Now, public sector, it gutted the public sector. But, you know, I think the state of Wisconsin had about a 15% of its working population were represented by unions back in 2011. And today that's about 7.5%.
Yeah. So, killed that, the teachers there.
So that was the result of this move that he made that he hoped would get him elected president. And when
he was a hot name for a while.
He was for a little while.
I mean, at one point, he was considered a front runner. People are like, this is the next guy.
Until they started taking polls, and he had about 3%, quickly dropped out. So all this to try to run for president. The presidential run completely failed.
Oh, my gosh.
And then
sunk like a lead balloon. I mean, he was in the race for like, after that, about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And he had to pull up stakes.
The problem is the workers of Wisconsin were left as collateral damage.
Yes.
And I mean, if you want to talk about something being just kind of patently unfair. But in 2026, some things I think are going to be changing. There's a lot that could happen in the state of Wisconsin to make things better. So Act 10, the public sector law that we were talking about, I think in 2024 or maybe early 2025, it was struck down as unconstitutional in a court in the state of Wisconsin. That's big news. Now it has to work its way through appeals.
Yep.
And will ultimately get to the Supreme Court of the state of Wisconsin, which last year in the most expensive state court election ever, you know, where Elon Musk decided to throw his hat in the ring and play ball and basically upset everyone in Wisconsin and lost it. They elected a worker-friendly justice to the state Supreme Court. They have another seat that's up in the spring. Things are trending away from anti-worker, super right-leaning politicians in Wisconsin right now, as it is in many places in America.
So Judge Crawford,
I think that's
her name, and she beat Schimmel, who was attorney general at one point. Yeah, he was a prosecuting attorney.
Yeah.
And that was when, Elon dumped 20 mil, 25
Something
mil?
Something like that. And it really turned everybody off.
Oh, because they were expecting, I mean, a lot of people were expecting Schimmel, the Republican, to win And then she won pretty handily. I think it was by like seven points.
It wasn't close.
No,
it was a resounding defeat.
Yeah.
So they're going to get another.
So they have majority on the Supreme Court now.
And they're expected to likely build upon that majority so that when Act 10 does get to the Supreme Court, they'll have a court that, you know, of folks who have workers' interests and the public interest in mind. So the likelihood of Act 10 being the unconstitutionality of Budget Act 10 being upheld at the Supreme Court is high, which is great. You get rid of that and you can start to let unions rebuild. I mean, they'll be crawling out of the ashes in the public sector and rebuilding from some really basic fundamental things because they had everything taken from them.
Yeah.
But couple that with the fact that across the country in 2026, you have elections coming up. And that's why you hear so much about gerrymandering and all this. But one of the top talking points in the state of Wisconsin is right to work. Because like we said, they, after passing Budget Act 10, you know, they came for the public sector.
Yes.
Then I didn't say anything because I wasn't in the public sector. Then they came for the private sector. And they did that through right to work and prevailing wage. And one of the top things that Democrats running up and down the ballot and even some Republicans are talking about is if I get elected, I am going to repeal right to work and reinstate prevailing wage. So this is something that happened in 2022 after Michigan retook everything. One of the first things they did was repeal right to work.
That was huge.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. And they're starting to rebuild. Their union movement is starting to get stronger. And with a stronger union movement comes higher wages, better workplace protections. People want to work
helps
in your
everyone.
State.
Helps everyone.
Absolutely. So I think that there are a lot
It really is a race to the bottom in states that are right to work. There's no two ways around it. You get to pay people less. And people have less to support their families, to pay their bills. It's... no one wins.
Well, the idea is this.
No, I'm sorry. The corporate business class wins.
Employers who want to pay people less, they definitely win.
They win. But people who are in the working class, they lose. And so do taxpayers.
And it's amazing how often you see this happen. But if you have an employer who would tell you that, you know, I can't pay you more, that would be bad.
Yeah.
Like that, we wouldn't be able to keep you on. We'd have to fire everybody. So we're just going to have to keep paying you less. And that's what's good for you. And people nod their heads and they're like, I understand. Okay. That's fair. That's reasonable. It's like you're somebody's just telling you, I can't give you more. So you got to work for less. And people just accept that. If somebody tells you like, it's good for you to make less money, I think you have to at least push back a little bit.
Absolutely.
Find out, like, is it, why do you think that? Are you telling me the truth? Do you have anything to back this up? Like, are you actually going to get rid of all of us, or are you just making this whole thing up? Because in most cases, they're just, it's like, well, if you guys make more money, that means I make less, and that's bad. Bad for who?
Totally. And it affects everything. Like, I think the consumer confidence index is at lowest it's been in a decade or so. And I mean, and that's a strong indicator of the economic health of the country. And you need people getting paid, again, livable wages, so they spend money that supports their local economies. I mean, without that, we're headed towards financial ruin.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about some of the underlying trends. I mean, things like the amount of the percentage of like vehicle loans that are in default right now, the amount of people who have $400 in case of like an unexpected flat tire or something like that. These things are trending in the wrong direction, in a very rapid way.
Yes.
So
we know the people who have stock portfolios, they're doing well because, again, it's all artificially inflated by artificial intelligence, ironically. But yes, most people who are in the working class, I mean, we're seeing what's happening. We're seeing what's happening we're not going to say runaway inflation, but it's definitely not going the right direction. And it's hard. It's hard for everyone out there. It's hard for people to make ends meet. And unless you pay people, again, a livable wage that through collective bargaining, because they're not going to get it out of the good of the hearts from their employers. We've seen how that works out.
Well, if inflation for things that you buy is going up at a rate of 3.5%, and you're not getting at least 3.5% in wage increases every year, you're losing money. and you can't buy things. And like spring break, that kind of stuff, forget about it. Right. So if somebody tells you you got to work for less, don't.
It's only the wealthy that are spending right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but we're going to get back into this a little bit. We've got some more news on organizing in the tech industry, and then some sort of devastating action that took place with building trades in the wind energy industry.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that when we come back right after a quick break right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic on 720 WGN. I'm Phil Davidson here with Ed Maher. In the last segment, we are talking about the importance of being a union membership and what that does for people's income levels and their benefits and for improving economies at both the state and local levels. And I have something to back all this up, Ed.
Wow, that's good.
Yes, as you know.
At least one of us does.
As you know, I'm a learned man.
That's what I keep hearing.
I read a lot of studies. And there was one that came out recently from the London School of Economics.
I hear they're pretty good at economics over there in
London.
They're
very, very good. This is not some diploma mill, okay? These are the top economists in the world. And they looked at the benefits of union membership in the States. And one thing they came up with was looking at, and this is something that hits home for you and I, how specifically it impacts people who are skilled artisans, such as electricians, plumbers, carpenters, in the trades.
Operating engineers.
Operating engineers, we'll include them too. Across all income levels, their study showed that bottom quartile skilled workers see a remarkable 46% income gain from union membership.
All right.
So in the top quartile, so people who are at the higher pay scales, they're still getting a 16.7% premium.
So nobody's losing. If you're a worker and that you join a union, you're going to do better.
46%?
I'm telling you.
I mean, that is a significant gain. And see, this is the problem. A lot of these studies that we get, when especially from, we'll say, the non-union building associations, they're only comparing it based on the pay scale, on wages alone.
Yeah.
This study looked at what you get with a total benefit package. And that's significant because, that's a big part of the benefits of joining a union. In addition to the better wages, the wages are always going to be better. You also get pensions, 401ks, annuities, obviously health care for your family. Most of it is, you know, there's zero premiums paid. Just obviously a very stable retirement. And that typically isn't factored in when you're comparing the benefits of union membership versus non-union membership, but this pretty clearly illustrates that it's a no-brainer to join a union.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. The in my neighborhood, probably everyone out there, your neighborhoods too, you see in December an awful lot of Amazon delivery trucks driving around, and the trucks are the same model trucks as UPS trucks. Instead of painting them brown, they paint them blue.
Okay.
So there was an Amazon driver who last week put out a tweet saying, "We drive the same trucks. Why don't we make $45 an hour? Like, we're doing the same work. Why aren't we getting paid as well as the UPS drivers?" And somebody responded, "The UPS drivers are Teamsters, and you're not."
Yep.
So, you know, and it really, really does get to be as simple as that. It's not as though UPS is going out of business or hurting. They make a lot of money, and the workers come for their piece of it.
Yeah.
But
they get their fair share.
It's an important point because think about that. Bottom quartile, you're thinking like the sort of the lower income jobs, maybe
Correct.
Say retail unions, stuff like that. So think something like Walmart or Target or some of these other companies that have been really, really vehemently opposed to unionization for their workforces.
Or also the richest, most profitable companies in the galaxy.
Well, thanks to the efforts of my family this Christmas, Target is doing a little bit better,
Good.
But what they'll say when people start talking about a union is, they just want your dues. Like, don't pay union dues. So union dues, say, in the building trades, it's typically between 2 and 3% of what you make.
Yep.
You pay back in dues. And a lot of people don't like the idea of that. Like, I don't want to pay dues. But being that you're a learned man, Phil, I'd like to ask you a question.
Let's do the math here.
Yeah. If I tell you that I and my union over here can get you a 46% income increase.
Hold on, let me get my calculator out here, okay?
Yeah.
Go on.
46. That's a lot.
Okay.
But you just pay 2%, maybe 3% in dues. Are you still doing way better?
Hold on, let me see. Divide by 4.
The answer is yes, listeners.
Carry the 1.
Phil's not using a very good calculator over there.
Yes, I see that this is advantageous to me to join the union.
For sure. So it really is that easy. And if employers were, you know, if they didn't think that unions were going to help you, they sure wouldn't spend so much money and so much time trying to talk you out of joining one.
No.
If they were harmless and they were going to wind up putting less money in your pocket, corporate America and, you know, the shareholders that they're obligated to represent, they would gladly explore any option that would put more money in their pockets and less money in the workers' pockets. So,
and don't take it from us. Take it from the London School of Economics. Okay?
Yeah, or like countless other places. When the United States had a functioning Bureau of Labor Statistics at the Department of Labor, which it no longer does.
The good old days, yeah.
Routinely showed that in construction, like in Illinois, for example, I want to say I used to always look at either plumbers or electricians, but a union-represented electrician made like 49% more than a non-union electrician.
Oh, yeah.
Doing the same thing, I would argue that, you know, being a part of a union gives you access to a training program that makes you a far more skilled worker. So you're making more money. You're delivering a better product for whoever you're working for. And, you know, whoever's hiring your electrical company is getting a better investment on their dollar.
Yes.
So, you know, this is...
Good studies from our friends at Aleppi, too.
There are mountains of data that show this. And the other side, what have they got? They have a flyer on the back of the bathroom stall door that says,
about it.
Instead of paying dues, buy a PlayStation. It's like,
good one.
It's the old,
yes.
Shut up and take what we're going to give you.
Yes.
So again, the moral of the story here from the workers' mic is, don't.
So yeah, so the equivalency there would be that dues are the same cost as a PlayStation. Seems like a pretty good deal to join the union if that's all it's going to cost me.
Join a union and you can buy 2 PlayStations or 10 PlayStations.
You can own PlayStation.
Yeah, you could take your kids on vacation. That's even better. That happened. That's a real world thing.
That's right.
To that point, in the tech industry, a couple weeks ago, we were talking about a strike from employees at the company Kickstarter.
Yes.
Right? And it was this platform where if you had an idea and you wanted to raise money, people could donate money via Kickstarter. And then whenever the thing came out, they would either get a share of it or they would just have a hand in making something good happen. It's Kickstarter. But their workers, after a while, said that things weren't going so well at the company. The company had given them, they were one of the first ones out there to go to a 4-day work week. And Kickstarter is sort of a philanthropic type of a thing. It's a goodwill type of thing. They weren't enormously profitable because they didn't have a really profitable, you know, business model. They're just helping people raise money.
But they take a little piece of every...
No question about it. They weren't doing bad.
Yeah.
Who's bigger,
GoFundMe or Kickstarter, I wonder?
I would have to think GoFundMe. Kickstarter seems like it was bigger... Like
when it first started?
Yeah.
GoFundMe's big.
But basically one of the things that they said was we're not going to have the super high pay for our tech workers, our programmers, all that some of these other companies do. But what we can give them is a little bit more recreation time. So they went to a 4-day, 8-hour a day schedule and they were one of the first to do it. And then they said, you know what, we're going to end that. And the workers just said, like, look, we took that because you said you were going to pay us less, and now you're saying you're going to put us back on 5 days and pay us less. And I can imagine there are folks out there listening sort of rolling your eyes saying, like, oh, you got to fight for 4 days. Why are you fighting for 4 days? I work 5 days. Again, in the tech industry, 4-day work weeks are not uncommon. Mm-mm. So, you know, this is just another segment of workers who have, you know, a world that they operate in. This is kind of the world that they operate in. So they're looking for different things. So that was actually the straw that broke the camel's back.
But they're not 4-10s. They're 4-8-hour days.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the studies, and before Kickstarter did this.
And that's still full-time.
For sure.
Right? Anything over 30 is full-time?
Yeah, I think it's 30 or 28 or something.
Yeah.
But they piloted this. The company piloted this before they made the change permanent, saying, this works. They're more productive. They're happier. It helps with our employee retention. People want to stay here. People want to work here.
Okay.
So it was a good thing. So they made it permanent, started to take it away, and that was the straw that broke the camel's back for these workers, and they went out on strike. And so it was basically over two things. It was the four-day work week, and it was trying to set up like an entry-level pay scale like schedule for new and incoming employees. So they go on strike, and after like 5 weeks, their strike fund is running down. They were organizing with the OPEIU, the Office Professionals Employees International Union.
Okay.
They're popping up more and more, it seems. And good work for them, because after 5 weeks, they got what they wanted out of Kickstarter. And I think it's just sort of a good illustration that different workers need different things.
Yeah.
And we can't necessarily apply the same expectations or biases of what we think about unions to new and emerging industries, because in the building trades, you're looking for money for retirement, money on your check, safety protections, that kind of stuff. And in the tech world, maybe they're just like, we make a good buck, but we have a four-day work week, and we want to keep it that way. So we have the fifth day to, you know, spend with our family or do whatever we want. So different workers need different things.
Yeah. And it's going to benefit tech workers who are non-union, because now they're going to have to compare their benefits, their pay scale, their days of working to what they receive over a Kickstarter, and you know they'll have to eventually compete with that. And it helps everyone.
There's a union at Google. Now, it's not a majority union. It's still just workers trying to kind of organize it via email, probably via Gmail. Mm-hmm. And over the years, many of them have been fired for doing this. But it's called the Alphabet Workers Union. Alphabet is the name of the parent company that owns Google.
I've heard about them, yes.
So they, I think last year, they had demanded a shift away from involuntary layoffs, which, I mean, what worker doesn't want there to be no involuntary layoffs? But they said, we want more job security, and they started to get more people interested, more people listening to them. So Google then did a voluntary buyout package for many departments of, you know, where workers were starting to take an interest in this. So small union, didn't have anywhere near a majority, wasn't a, you know, an official representative for bargaining, but it worked, you know. So in the tech industry, they're finding that they need different things, but that they can get them by working collectively.
Yep.
And last year, in the video game industry, Microsoft had a subsidiary, I think, called Activision.
I remember this,
that organized. And the president of Microsoft, his name is Brad Smith, he said that when they started asking for a union, that Microsoft had more to gain than it did to lose by staying neutral.
They say neutral, right.
And that's a huge thing. I mean, if your workers are saying like, hey, we want a little something, we're happy, we're not quitting, we're not at war with you, but we want a seat at the table, we want a voice in how to change things, and you in turn hire someone to find ways to fire them, harass them, and make sure they get nothing that they want, what you're left with at the end is a workforce that looks at you as an enemy now. Maybe didn't before, but does now. And so I think it's, for a company like Microsoft to have one of their, you know, executive leaders say, you have more to gain than you do to lose by staying neutral. I mean, that's a huge,
I remember
statement.
That was cool. Yeah. And it really is, as to bring it back to what we were talking about earlier, it's a matter of survival for a lot of these employees and a lot of these industries that, again, are being upended by emerging technologies and artificial intelligence, everything else that's happening in the world. So if you can't band together and protect yourselves against what's coming, good luck to you, right? I mean, I don't think a lot of these people are doing it because they're greedy or they're trying to stick it to the man. They're doing it because this is about protecting themselves and being able to survive in what's going to be a very tough economy for people in that field.
I think
in a very tough job market.
For sure. You're 100% right, because in the tech sector, you have to look at what's happening right now. Workers, and we've seen many companies doing this, placing sort of AI monitored quotas on workers who code, saying like, you've got to code twice as much, or we're going to do as much as we were doing with half the staff. And if you can't do it, we're going to fire you. And we're watching everything that you're doing with AI and all this kind of stuff. So it's like trying to work. I think everybody, well, many people probably, maybe not everybody, has had one of those jobs at some point in your life probably when I was like a teenager was the last time, but where you've got somebody standing behind you looking over your shoulder,
mm-hmm.
how much less productive are you when you have somebody that is watching every single move you make, just waiting for you to do something wrong?
All right.
Right. Is that a workplace that you're going to be happy, that you're going to be, you know, that you're going to do well, that you're going to want to stay,
that you're going to thrive in? Right. No.
Yeah. I mean, that's not the kind of business anybody should aim to run.
No.
But yeah, that's what the tech industry is now. So, people are going to find more reasons to look for protection.
Yeah.
You know, we saw it with federal workers where people had their union rights taken away. People like the National Park Service.
Yep.
Like, we're going to get rid of all the park rangers. I don't know, maybe so that they couldn't tell, they wouldn't know when like oil derricks were being built in Yellowstone or God knows what. But the first thing
don't
that they
him.
Do is they come looking for a union. So,
yeah. And to think, I mean, I think 10 years ago, it would be almost unfathomable to think that there would be video game designers deciding to join a union and organizing. And I mean, that to me is a positive sign that now it's impacting industries that has always been white collar. There wasn't a lot of union density, you know,
yeah.
like people are changing with the times. And, you know, I think the next step would be to, you know, collectively bargain to protect yourselves again, like they did in Hollywood from AI, because
right.
yeah, that's, I mean, they were smart about that. I know it's, you know, that was a long slog, the strike with both the writers and the actors' guilds. But, you know, in the end, they've protected themselves in certain fashion. We'll see how long this lasts for. But,
yeah,
when your entire industry and your, again, livelihood is getting encroached upon, I mean, now there's, what, AI actors and actresses that have
that
representation? Like,
the craziest thing.
You've got to, you need to come up with a way to fight against that. And how do you do it? With the backing and the collective bargaining of your fellow coworkers.
Yeah.
Without it, on your own, good luck.
Nobody's been successful in doing it on their own. The
no.
only places where they've shown that they've been able to protect themselves from it is when there's a union behind it.
Exactly.
Or in some cases, many unions, like back when the writers were on strike. But yeah, to your point, I mean,
yeah.
I forget the name. We talked about this, I think, on a show maybe a year ago.
The actress?
Yeah, there's an actress. She was an AI actress. And basically, she was like, they did a bunch of research to see what kind of female actress people want to see, like somewhat wholesome, like right down the middle with everything.
Yeah.
And she had like a certain voice. She has a name, a first and last name,
her
but
name.
She's completely
yeah.
AI, the voice, the likeness, everything. But she's represented. She was
yeah.
introduced at like an industry convention, and there were like 10 agencies that were bidding to represent an AI actress. Now,
maybe our producer could pipe that name into our ear, but you know,
I think,
bother them.
I think this whole thing is going to go the way of like NFTs, those stupid, like, we're going to send you, you can buy a meme that's on the internet for $10 million, and those things
yeah.
3 years later are worth like $20 because it was a stupid idea. Having AI actresses and actors that are going to command wages and stuff, like nonsense.
I know. We just need to, you know, the way to fight against this as consumers and viewers is just to not watch stuff that's generated by that. Because, if people decide, like, look, I don't want to watch some AI actress, I want to watch real people with real human emotion, then they won't use it as much.
Yeah.
And I did see something that YouTube now, which is by far the largest streaming service, I mean, just
yeah.
literally dominates all the other ones combined. 20% of content, according to a recent study by some software company, said that is AI generated slop, and it's
right,
still sadly like generating views.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like, come on, people, like,
just
you really
be
want,
aware.
Yeah,
when you're watching,
stop watching AI slop. Like, go back to watching cat videos, please.
Please.
Yes.
All right, we've got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into this wind industry thing that happened, and then we'll close out the show with a shout-out to a beloved listener. So come back and join us at right here at the Workers' Mic on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, listeners of the Workers' Mic, right here on 720 WGN. We've just got a few minutes left in the show. Something we've wanted to get to and haven't gotten to until right now is in the past week, the federal government has stopped wind projects, offshore wind projects in New England, New York, Virginia.
The only areas where any when development was happening.
Right.
Like, this is it.
And one of them is actually suing the federal government. It's called Dominion Energy.
Yes.
They built a $9 billion wind farm offshore. It was scheduled to come online in like 2 months. And the administration has they shut down some of these projects, like the Revolution Wind Farm.
Yeah,
they did this.
No, these are good union jobs building.
This is American made energy, yes. Pretty much. But they're shutting them down. They tried to shut them down last year, and it was defeated in court because they didn't have a good reason to do it. They just were doing it, so they changed their reason, and now they're saying that offshore wind farms are bad for, they interfere with radar, so it's a national security threat. Every time that they need to do whatever it is that they want to do, they seem to just say it's for national security. But this company is suing the government, saying the Department of Defense signed off and was involved in every step of these wind projects, saying like these aren't going to be a hindrance on national security. So yeah, we'll keep listeners posted on that. And in the meantime, for the last part of the show, we wanted to throw a shout out to a beloved fan of the show. So,
yes, last week we had the passing of someone close to my family, close to producer Kevin, one of the most important people, part of the show, who we all know and love.
We do.
So, yes, we want to just say rest in peace to Barbara Collins Davidson, longtime WGN listener.
You know, thoughts and prayers to her family. We had her in the studio for a tour one day, and she was wonderful. She was a big fan of the show, big fan of WGN. So,
yes,
thoughts go out to your family.
Thank you,
Barb. We've got to run. It was a great show. Thank you, as always, for tuning in and spending your Sunday morning with us. We'll be back next week with more Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Workers' Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers' Mic, visit WGNradio.com.